Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Finally, a deal for Frito-Lay workers in Kansas, but not all are happy. What Bernie Sanders is saying about a possible deal on rebuilding our infrastructure. And today on the show, our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger, and Insulators Local 6 out of Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome to the Tuesday, July 27th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Tommy Buffenbarger, former general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, is going to be our first guest for the last five, going on 6 years. He's been our independent labor observer. He just loved doing the show and the machinists for some time. We're also proud sponsors of the show. And he's going to get into deregulation, number one. Tommy talked about this on the show many, many times because so many airlines over the years, and this is where they really hit deregulation hard. It was airlines and trucking. And since that happened, we've seen a lot of bankruptcies. We're going to connect the dots with Tommy on that. American jobs still going overseas. This has been bleeding for 20 years, ever since we normalized relations with China. Then we're going to get into the American Recovery Act and our infrastructure. Speaking of which, Bernie Sanders did an op-ed in The Guardian last week arguing that the biggest win for the working class in decades is within reach if the $3.5 billion budget agreement is reached by Sanders, Biden, and other leading Democrats. He calls it one of the most important pieces of legislation since the New Deal. Now, this is not the bipartisan agreement. This is something they're trying to achieve through reconciliation, which means they only need 50 votes. They got to get all the Democrats on board, and not all of them are on board. But according to the op-ed, the proposal, in addition to the implementation of many other major progressive policy goals, will end the days of billionaires not paying a nickel in federal tax. It would also reduce childhood poverty by expanding the child tax credit, make child care more accessible and affordable, provide universal pre-kindergarten to every 3- and 4-year-old in the country, guarantee paid family and medical leave, transform the U.S. energy system away from fossil fuels toward renewables, make community colleges tuition free, permit Medicare to negotiate prescription drug prices with the pharmaceutical industry, and upgrade our infrastructure. That is a lot. Wow. I know there's a lot of promises there. Will all that happen? I don't know. I doubt it. But anyway, they're moving in the right direction. So Tommy's going to chime in on that. Later in the show, we're going to check in with the Insulators out of Boston. Business agent Jeffrey Saliba. I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly. He's going to be joining us to talk about his union, which represents specialists in mechanical insulation, fire stopping, hazardous waste remediation. Their members, goes without saying, they get world-class training, Department of Labor certification, great wages and benefits, and they've been around for over 100 years. We're going to talk about prevailing wages. Here's the issue. Why doesn't the state, and he's talking about Massachusetts, why doesn't the state require unlicensed contractors to adhere to the state's own Department of Apprenticeship Training Standards? What's the point of having such a department if the state isn't going to require contractors to adhere to its own training standards? That's a good question. The other issue is, why don't cities and towns require unlicensed trade contractors to have workers who have gone through an apprenticeship training? Otherwise, the taxpayers are taking a chance on whether those workers are really trained and are performing the work that should be performed. He also wants to talk about the concept of individual unions. Jeffrey says there's way too much individualism among unions and its members. Rightly so, each union is trying to get as many work hours as they can for their members, but it's often at the detriment of other unions. So, he says the labor movement should be making a bold movement towards sectoral bargaining. And we'll get into that. Sectoral bargaining. I've been reading a whole lot about that, and it's got some good points to it. Good points where you bargain for an entire sector in the industry, like all food workers. Instead of, say, if you want to organize a certain grocery chain, well, all the grocery chains all at once. And they're all unionized. Not easy, but can be done. Apparently, it's being done in Europe in various countries. So Jeffrey Saliba will be our second guest right here on the show. Well, we've got some good news for Frito-Lay workers who have been striking in Topeka, Kansas for nearly 3 weeks over forced overtime, unsafe working conditions, and long hours. They voted for a contract over the weekend in a vote that a union official described as very close. The agreement ends what they called suicide shifts. Back-to-back, 12-hour shifts with only 8 hours in between. 84-hour work weeks. The contract guarantees workers 1 day off per week and increases wages. Now, according to an anonymous warehouse worker who had spent the last 20 years working in the plant, there was more disappointment than happiness with the contract. And many workers who voted to approve the agreement were compelled by necessity after almost 3 weeks without work. But boy, the stories that have come out of that plant. I want to read a few. And these were tweets over the last couple of weeks. Therese Lundgren tweeted, "I'm striking for a pay raise. I've only received an 83-cent an hour raise in the last 10 years. She's there 18 years. Charles Taylor, "I'm striking for more time to see my family, period. John Reeve, been there 4 years. Similar tweet, "I'm striking because of the unfair working conditions and to spend more time with my family, especially my 2-year-old daughter." Lindy Carson said, "She started there 23 years ago. Overtime is just as bad today as when I started." Mark McCarter wrote to the magazine Relevant, "This is not a good job. He's been there 37 years. At 7 a.m., our warehouse is 100 degrees. 7 in the morning. We don't have air conditioning. We have cooks in the kitchen on the fryers that are 130 or 140 degrees making chips and sweating like pigs. Meanwhile, the managers are sitting in their offices with AC. This is in Topeka, Kansas. You'd think it's in like Guatemala or something. My gosh. Wow, but they have a contract. They have a contract. Not all are happy. I mean, it's par for the course. Let's talk about the Olympics now. The 2020 Summer Olympics officially kicked off in Tokyo on Friday amid rising fears stemming from a surge in coronavirus infections in Tokyo and worldwide. More than 100 cases have already been linked to the games, including 3 athletes, one of whom is in the Olympic Village. 19 reported on Friday alone. And the polling shows as many as 80% of the people in Japan did not want the Olympics to be held this year. It's not ready. They're not ready. And check this out. Last month, it was reported that about 10,000 of the 80,000 volunteers who are assisting with preparations for the Olympics quit, the vast majority of whom cited fears about the pandemic. Organizers have also been criticized for committing labor violations and abusing workers. And the International Olympic Committee has been accused of abdicating responsibility for its failure to investigate allegations of labor and safety violations committed during the preparations. Earlier this month, and this was only weeks before the games began, the Building and Woodworkers International, BWI, a leading international union federation with millions of members, released a report. It was titled The Dark Side of the Tokyo 2020 Summer Olympics, which identified ongoing patterns of dangerous and illegal overwork, along with a culture of fear, mistreatment of migrant workers, low wages, and perilous working conditions, among other concerns, at the construction sites for the stadiums and the Olympic Village in Tokyo. The report also alleged that the IOC declined to investigate allegations of these and other violations occurring at the new Olympic venues. Wow. All right, we have to take a break. Tommy Buffenberger, our independent labor voice, coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. That's AWF Union Podcast. And follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. Started in Cleveland, Ohio 50 years ago. You can find more at ulagency.org. In fact, Dave Meganhart, we have him on every other month. He'll be on 1 week from tomorrow. Right now, let's go to our live line and join the former president, general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, now our independent labor voice, Mr. Thomas Buffenbarger. Tommy, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
Hey, great to be back, Flash. I look forward to this show because a lot of stuff's happened since the last time we spoke.
Boy, you're not kidding. Well, let's start off with some good news. I saw this about a week and a half ago. I guess United Airlines announced that it will purchase some 200 IAM-made, that's the important part, machinist-made 737 MAX aircraft, and they're going to hire more than 25,000 airline workers. Now, hopefully, this trend will continue. You know, there's a lot of areas that are real scary in America today, and I'm hoping and praying that more people will get vaccinated so we don't go back to the shutdowns. But certainly, That is good news, and it's going to help a lot of our brothers and sisters who work on those planes. But you have some concerns now, don't you?
I do, Flash. First of all, I applaud the news, and I applaud United for taking a leap of faith and you know, acquiring that number of aircraft, as we're hopefully coming to an end with this pandemic. The question I have is, though that number, 25,000 workers, new workers, sounds fantastic, and I know those are good jobs people should want. The problem we have is wondering, where are all these workers going to go? Because in the Seattle area, where we do the 737 MAXs, there's only a limited capacity to that plant and what it can handle. So it sounds to me like there's a possibility Boeing may be looking to expand its production capabilities, which is great. But it's, where do they want to expand? We have the unionized plants throughout the country, and then we have South Carolina, where we've talked about this plant many times, non-union. That was Nikki Haley's gift to Boeing, you know, a tax-free deal for 20, 25 years to get the company to locate a plant there. And there's a lot of land around that plant, a lot of space that can be developed into new manufacturing facilities. So with the kind of numbers Boeing's talking about bringing on board, where they're going to work is the real question. And so we're going to watch this very carefully, because if it goes to South Carolina, where they make it a badge of honor to be union-free down there, we're going to have a real tussle on our hands. So I applaud the United. They're going to be hiring a lot of workers to take care of those planes, no matter where they're made. So that's good for the IAM. It's good for the airline industry to have new airplanes in the sky, that are doing very well, by the way, right now, since they've solved their problems and stuff with it. All that good news, Flash, just bears a little bit of caution as we see this story unfold.
Right. It's one to watch, no doubt. Tom, I want to talk about deregulation, and you and I have many conversations over the years about deregulation, because you know it all too well from the airline industry. And I remember, boy, it was back, I think it was in the early 70s when they came out and they said, oh, we got to cut the red tape here, deregulate, open this up, and it's going to be good for the American public. And that spread to the trucking industry. I mean, it affected all industries, utilities. There's another one right there. What's your take looking at this whole deregulation process years later, Tom?
Flash, you make a great point about how long it's been. It was in the 70s when the administration in place at the time and the Congress, which was controlled by the Democrats at that time, approved deregulation of the airline industry, deregulation of trucking, and the list went on and on and on. And deregulation, for those who lived in those times, it became a code word for destroy, because the ability of manufacturers, the ability of trucking companies, the ability of airlines to operate in an environment where there's no rules, or they're very relaxed to the point of being no rules, where they could operate like that, they destroyed the good jobs people knew. They destroyed the good jobs in trucking, in airlines, and in aircraft manufacturing. It was a real fight. And now we see deregulation has spread to every facet of our lives. We've deregulated the building industry, and now you have buildings like in Florida that fall down. We've deregulated just about everything that touches our lives. And the one that I think really stands out that most people may not be aware of is we deregulated the food industry along with all these things to today. You know, deregulation, the promise was it'll create competition. That'll create more good jobs. The world will be moving technologically faster. There'll be all kinds of new things to benefit the consumer. Well, here's where we are in food today. A handful of companies control 83% of the food we eat. So when you go to the supermarket and you see how the prices have skyrocketed in the last few months, sure, we've got a pandemic going on, and sure, things might be a little tough internationally with climate change and the import and export of food, but the prices have just shot up tremendously. It's five companies, for the most part, that control all this, or the largest part of it. So that's deregulation hitting people everywhere in the pocketbook. And deregulation hits the poorest of us hardest. And so when we talk about deregulation, to me, it's a sign of destruction. It's a sign of devolution, meaning we're going backwards. We have rules in society for a reason. And that is so that everybody will have the fairest chance possible to succeed. But when you deregulate something as basic as food, you put pressure on the poor, you put pressure on the farmers, the little farmers. They go out of business, they close up shop, and they sell their land for what? It's not being used for farming.
Right.
So we've got a real problem coming up, and it's self-inflicted, and we got to figure out how to put some sense back into society and the rules of engagement for people to have good jobs with all the good benefits that can bring and where society gets a fair shake. So this deregulation thing, you know, has not been good. You know, in airlines, we were promised if we deregulate the airlines and get away from the old famous names, there'll be more jobs for you to organize. There'll be more jobs, good jobs, for people in the airline industry. Well, we ended up with fewer airlines, and that is continuing. The airlines still look at one another, trying to gobble each other up. That's what deregulation brought. And so we've been burned time and time again. When do we wake up and realize it's time to stop the foolishness?
And Tom, deregulation has led to many, many bankruptcies. You may not have this number, but maybe in the next show or the show after that, try to find, if you can, how many airlines went bankrupt as a result of deregulation policies. And another thing, there was a key word that you mentioned, self-inflicted. That is so true, especially when it comes to trade. Think back to 2001 when we normalized relations with China. That just opened the door for jobs to go to China. I know that's another subject, but it's one that needs to be addressed. And to your point, Democrats voted for it. I mean, it wasn't just Republicans, it was Democrats. They were all in favor of these trade deals, and they were not good for the American worker, not good at all.
We, I remember, Flash, and I was serving as president at the time when the deals with China, most favored nation status and entry into the World Trade Organization, we were talking about this is deregulating the order of business. This is deregulating international trade when all of this was before the legislative bodies. And they laughed at us. They said, oh, it's going to be great for you. Well, we saw millions of jobs leave this country. And for the places that had the cheapest wages possible. And I'll never forget, there was one U.S. senator from a state that borders on Ohio says, well, if you guys weren't so greedy trying to get wage increases, maybe they wouldn't be so quick to leave. So they were this guy was trying to blame the workers for the decisions big corporations and Congress made.
Unbelievable.
They weren't that Congress, those leaders weren't looking out for the interests of the people of the United States. It was to take care of big business and corporations. And we're paying a terrible price for that today. The pandemic has proven that, if nothing else. When we couldn't find personal protective equipment because it's all made in China, we couldn't find it here and we had to rely on them to supply it. The chemicals, the things we need to make our pharmaceuticals, are all made in India or China or elsewhere around the world. To make the medicines we need, we can't do it unless we have some sort of a deal with a foreign country. And it used to be that in America, we could take care of our own needs and actually supply the rest of the world ourselves. But we deregulated everything so that people can make, the corporate bosses can make billions at the expense of everyday working people like you and I.
Our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger, former general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. We'll continue the conversation with Tom later in the show. Insulators Local 6 out of Boston. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, we're available on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We'd appreciate a 5-star rating. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the North Coast Area Labor Federation, all connected to the AFL-CIO. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Tommy Buffenbarger, our independent labor voice for at least 5 years. Is it 5 years that you're retired now, Tom?
Actually, Flash, it's going on closer to 6.
Okay. Boy,
I'm only getting older.
Aren't we all? You were telling me an incredible story, and I've heard so much about the hollowing out of the middle class. I mean, it's been going on for decades. And a good example, you're talking about jobs going to China and how Wall Street likes to come up with a hedge fund, and then they buy a mom and pop store and they get rid of all the union contracts. They move the jobs overseas. I mean, this has happened again and again and again. And in many cases, there are political ties to companies. You got to tell our listeners about, what is it, Mylan Laboratory? This is a drug company in West Virginia. Tell me the story here, Tom.
The story story is a company called Mylan. It's a manufactures the ingredients. So all the little things that go into making medicines, pharmaceuticals, stuff we're used to every day. Plus, they make medicines as well. And it's a company that many people may recognize the name EpiPen. This is a company that brought EpiPens about for those that suffer reactions to bee stings or stuff that gives them an allergic reaction. This helps fix it. This company employed thousands in the Morgantown, West Virginia area. It's a huge plant. It's represented by the steel workers. And the employees there enjoy great wages, great benefits. It was the company itself, when the founder and the CEO was still around, was and in charge, was just a great contributor to that community in every sense of the word. It contributed to the employees getting education, to their health care, to their kids, helping them get through school and into colleges. It was a good corporate citizen, a term we've abandoned a long time ago. Well, the owner used to walk the plant once a week. He would meet the employee. He knew everybody.
Right.
And this isn't, you know, just all little stuff, mom and pop, 30, 40 people. It was in the over 1,000, 1,500, and at its peak, it was more than that. He knew his community, and they knew him. And he treated his employees kind of like family, because it's kind of like a fairy tale story here. Well, he retires, grows old, he passes away. The company is taken over by people from other places in the world. And the first thing they want to do is go to war on the employees, and they want to cut out those wages. They want to cut out the benefits. And ultimately, they wanted the employees to get so angry there would be a tough situation, maybe a strike, maybe a all-out, you know, labor management war. Because what they wanted to do was move the work and the plant to India. And so the fight ensued. It's still going on. And this is where this fight becomes very tough. The Steelworkers Union has always been very active and very successful in West Virginia. They've been successful, period. But, I mean, they did a lot of good things there. They've tried to reach out to their U.S. senator for help on this. And that guy that they reach out to is Senator Joe Manchin. He's not returning their calls. He's not offering any help. He won't communicate with the people in the community who are trying to reach him as well, because his daughter is an executive with this company who stands to make an absolute fortune in the multiples of tens of millions of dollars when the plant moves. So I'm thinking, well, here's Joe Manchin in the U.S. Senate right now. He's kind of created a tough situation for the president, who's trying to rebuild the American workplace and create good jobs here. And here's Joe Manchin helping a foreign country steal work away from America. So the jobs continue to bleed out from American shores. And so I'm hoping that the steelworkers are able to get through to Manchin, that he remembers why he's there. It's not to create problems, it's to solve problems and to support the efforts to make our country as strong as possible. And that all begins with a good job.
Yep.
And we've had all this stuff in Morgantown, West Virginia. And I wish the steelworkers luck. I wish the employees of this company luck. They've made a lot of good things for America. They make thousands of different chemicals or ingredients used in medicines really around the world. And it has been cited as and kind of, you know, highlighted as a plant, as a company that does things the way they should be done, including to the point the FDA used it as a model of how to safely produce the medicines we need in this country. And it's a source of great pride for those employees, the state of West Virginia, and for America. And to see it go away under these kind of conditions is just unbelievable. So people need to pay attention. Politics, again, have consequences. We're seeing it there. And Flash, this wouldn't even be possible if we had not deregulated the pharmaceutical industry as well.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So deregulation is just another word for destroy. Yeah. And we got to stop doing this to ourselves.
And West Virginia is a poor state to begin with. They can't afford to lose another company.
This company is one of the stars in West Virginia, and you're right. West Virginia desperately needs these kind of jobs because these are the jobs that offer opportunity to so many people, not just the workers at the plant, but to their families. The workers might just earn enough money to be able to send their kids onto higher education or a craft or a skill that they wouldn't be able to do otherwise. And it's good for that state. And Joe Manchin ought to be the champion of their cause, not their nemesis.
No, he's all behind his daughter. She's going to make millions of dollars. Wow. You know, thanks for the story. And we will follow up on this with the steelworkers. We just had them on a couple of days ago, and they're one of the great sponsors of the show. And, and to your point, too, they're very, very proactive. They have that rapid response team, and I'm sure they've activated that in the state of West Virginia because that's garbage. That's absolute garbage. And Manchin has been a stick in the mud to Biden, as we all know. I mean, on the filibuster situation, voting rights. I mean, there's a number of progressive issues that have not gone forward because of Joe Manchin. So we've got some problems here.
The polls in West Virginia show that the people, like the infrastructure plan, like everything else that's going on that could bring good jobs to West Virginia, they're all for it. Joe Manchin's the one trying to find reasons to stop it. He thinks placating Republicans and Mitch McConnell is a good deal for him. You know what? It's not a good deal for the people of West Virginia.
Nope.
And I don't understand what he's not going to win over the support of Mitch McConnell when he needs it for something. Why he plays the game with him, I do not understand.
You know, to me, that's like dealing with the devil, Tom. I mean, I can't figure that one out at all. I don't know. Let's get into the infrastructure here. We've got a couple minutes left. And Bernie Sanders is commented as saying this could be the biggest deal since the New Deal. Especially the reconciliation bill. They have to get the 50 Democrats. There's Joe Manchin again. They got to get the 50 Democrats on board, and they could use the budget reconciliation process. What's your gut telling you here? I mean, I got the feeling something's going to happen. We got the bipartisan infrastructure deal. What's Tom Buffenbarger think about what's going on right now?
I think something's going to happen, and it's got to happen. I think even the Republican side is feeling the pressure that in America we got to do something and be bold about it because we're coming out of a pandemic. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of misunderstanding about what this means and people going back to work and what are we going to do. Well, that plan has all kinds of things outlined and itemized in it that gives us a roadmap to remaking America. And Biden's right on, build back better. Make it better for people. And it covers such a wide swath of interest, whether it's in jobs, construction, whether it's in manufacturing. You know, for everything we're going to do to rebuild this country in infrastructure, it's going to require manufacturing to make the tools possible to get that done. Then it takes the people to operate those tools to make it happen. And you have to have people who have a good education behind them to figure out how we're going to do it. And in taking care of all of them, the healthcare infrastructure needs to improve. And at the end of all of it, that with the things that have been done to help pension plans, we're going to have stronger, better, hopefully regulated pensions for Americans that'll see them through into their retirement years. This plan covers so much, and it will last far beyond the lifetimes of many of us, providing good things to America. And I hope Senator Sanders is right. He actually, right now, with the things he's saying that he wants to see come out of the plan, the worst thing that happens to the American worker is life improves. I hope Senator Sanders gets exactly the opportunities he sees possible and can make them happen.
In my opinion, if you get half of what he's proposing, we're way ahead of the game. Half of that. I mean, that's all part of the negotiation process, but we'll see what lies ahead. Tommy, we're going to leave it on that note. Tom Buffenbarger, our independent labor voice, former general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. You stay safe. We'll talk to you at the end of August, okay?
You got it, Flash. Great to be with you, and the best to all your listeners.
Quick break. When we come back, Insulators Local 6 out of Boston, Massachusetts.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
To Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And we're on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast is our presence there, and that's our Twitter handle, at AWF Union Podcast. Go to Boston, Massachusetts right now and welcome Jeffrey Saliba. Jeffrey is business agent, a local six for the Insulators. Website, real simple, insulators6.org. Jeffrey, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
And you're telling me, what is it, 500 active members in Boston, the Boston area? Maybe you can confirm that. And what's your territory over there, brother?
We have about 500 active members. I cover all of New England except for Connecticut, who has their own local. And we cover a little piece of that up on the northern part of it.
Okay, good, good. How's the work been so far?
Boy, we're straight out ever since the economy opened up again. Everybody's working. Everybody who wants to work is working. And I have probably 990 travelers in the area, and I need about 20 more.
Okay, with that being said, how's your apprenticeship program doing?
Our apprenticeship is strong. We got we've gotten a great applicants in the last 3 years. We've gotten a lot of women. Actually, I think it's 20% women we took in this year in our first year apprenticeship class. So, we sell ourselves on our professionalism, our craftsmanship, our safety acumen, and our diversity. Because a lot of these jobs require Boston residents, women, minorities. And we're trying to cover all that.
Very good. Well, I've been hearing good things. You know, one of our regular guests is Pete Almeny. In fact, he's going to be on the show tomorrow from the Labor Management Trust. And what you're doing nationally, especially attracting women and minorities, is phenomenal, because in the trades, it's much lower than that. I think it's only like 3-4%, especially when it comes to females. But Heat and Frost, they're being attracted to Heat and Frost. That's good stuff. Good stuff. Insulators. There's a couple things you want to get into. Number one, prevailing wages. And this is pretty interesting, because the state, and we're talking about Massachusetts here, has an opportunity to do the right thing when it comes to unlicensed contractors. Now, why don't you explain what's at stake here, Jeff?
So when you have a licensed contractor, you are pretty much assured that they had some sort of training, whether it be an apprenticeship or whatever else training. They've had to take a state exam to deem them qualified to perform that trade. Unlicensed, on the other hand, there are no requirements. Even though the state has an apprenticeship, has a Department of Labor of apprenticeship training, with municipal work, they don't require tradesmen to have any kind of training. If a municipal has a bond to build a school or a fire station or anything like that, so you really don't know when you have an unlicensed worker on the job. You don't really know if they have any training. Now you have the Green New Deal, for instance. You have all these requirements for LEED certifications to get the carbon footprint down. So you really don't know if you're getting a qualified insulator on the job. We have a 4-year apprenticeship school. We cover top to bottom in insulation and how to skillfully apply it. And you can go to any non-union job and know that they don't know how to read a blueprint. They don't know how to read the specs for the job. They're cutting corners. They got issues with black mold. And you know what damage that can do to a young lung. The taxpayer isn't getting their money's worth. And I don't understand why the state or any municipality doesn't require some sort of apprenticeship training, at least to adhere to its own department's policies, like the Department of Apprenticeship Training. I just don't understand that. I mean, it just pretty much renders that department useless. Why even have it?
What about like the state federation, maybe a collection of unions going, in this case, it's Massachusetts. Have you gone to the legislature and said collectively, you know what, this is wrong. This is wrong. We're trying to make sure the standards are what they are, standards. And we don't have unlicensed contractors doing the work. What are they saying to that?
Well, they say that ABC would fight it and that they would win it in court, but so I have a better chance, I think, of getting an ordinance passed from town to town. And we've done that in a couple of towns so far.
Okay.
I'm working on Peabody, Massachusetts right now.
Good. Yeah, get the cities and eventually maybe the state will follow. I follow you. That's a good strategy. Yeah. All right, the other issue you wanted to get into is the concept of individual unions. And this is going to require some explaining. And I've heard about you're laughing. I've heard of sectoral bargaining. And I know there's a degree of controversy in all of this. But, Jeff, why don't you explain what sectoral bargaining is all about and we may need to go in that direction?
Well, you know, I think individual unions is just that. They're too individualized, I think. You know, we're fighting with each other over jurisdictional issues. One may be, like, for instance, the license and the unlicensing. You know, those people that are licensed, you know, aren't going to help us with the unlicensed. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
it's just, it's too much infighting. You know, some of the backing politicians, you know, half the union locals are voting for Donald Trump, the other half is voting for Biden. You know, there's just way too much individualism in a union. It goes against what a union is, to be honest with you. But, you know, so sectorial bargaining, they do it over in Europe. It's like, you know, 95% people belong to a union. And it's bringing democracy, I feel, not that individual unions don't, but on the higher level, it brings democracy into the workplace. I mean, let's face it, we all work 24 hours a day now. I mean, if you're not getting ready to go to work, you're going to work. And if you're at work, then you're coming home and you're unwinding. And, you know, it's and then you're up and doing it again the next day. So, you know, I just think, you know, all together, you have a committee of politicians, you have a committee of businessmen, you have a committee of labor, and you already have the blueprint with prevailing wages, so at least for the trades, at least for the, you know, the construction trades. But I just think that would bring in non-union, because non-union work on, they love prevailing wage jobs. They love it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they fight for it. I had a kid in there yesterday that we were trying to organize telling me, you know, he gets 3 months of prevailing wage work. And, you know, he was happy with that. I mean, they fight for it, he says. It's a lot of backbiting in the shop. And it doesn't need to be that way. We should be on the same page. We have an invested, we have an investment in working. We're there all the time. Every time with technology, we got texting, and we got emails, and, you know, it's never ending. You know, I got contractors texting my guys at 9 o'clock in the morning, at night, telling them where to go the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so anyways, I just think we're not all on the same page, and I think sectorial bargaining would bring everybody together. And there wouldn't be all this individualism. I think individualism is killing humans, to be honest with you. I really do.
Now, is this Jeffrey Saliba talking? I mean, have you talked to your union about this?
This is Jeffrey Saliba talking, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, I've talked to the building trades about it and everything else, you know. You know, they all look at me like I got two heads, but that's okay. I don't mind. I like to be, you know, I like to free think a little bit, you know. I don't like to be pigeonholed and, you know, not have any ideas, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, because let's face it, I mean, private unions in this country is 6.4%. So, you know, from 35% back in the early 70s, and something's not working. I mean, you keep doing the same thing over and over again. Expecting a different result, you know, that's called craziness.
Yeah, definition of insanity. Yeah, union density actually was 35% in 1953, and it's just, it's slipped since then. But it really got whacked in the 70s, and then I keep going back to Reagan and the air traffic controllers.
Absolutely.
When he fired the air traffic controllers, that was the beginning of the end there.
There should have been a general strike across the country back then, and there wasn't.
Yep.
And that was the biggest downfall of the unions right there.
Yep. Didn't stand up to them. Well, you take care. Jeffrey Saliba, business agent, Local 6, insulator6.org is the website. Hey, keep the faith. Keep talking about this. Eventually, things will turn around, okay?
Thanks so much.
You got it.
Thanks for having
me. All right. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the Heat and Frost Insulators, LMCT, and the Teamsters. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. find out more information online at labortools.com.